Business Growth Talks podcast is created and hosted by Mark Haywood. In this show, we talk about how to grow a business in the growth stage. The growth stage is often marked by rapid developments, increased revenue, and an escalating customer base. In each episode, we talk to entrepreneurs and business owners who have grown businesses, and we cover topics like scaling processes, market expansion, financial management, human resource and talent development, and customer retention. If you are looking for actionable advice, tips, and techniques on how to grow, run, and build your business, this is the podcast for you.
Welcome back to another episode of Business Growth Talks, where we deep dive into the strategies and stories behind scaling successful businesses. I'm your host, Mark Haywood, and today we have a very special guest who is an expert in navigating the intricate world of digital marketing. Joining us is Ashley Stanford, a seasoned digital marketing consultant and a freelance expert with over 15 years of experience. Ashley specializes in crafting strategic marketing plans that are not just about innovative, but also deliver substantial results across multiple sectors. Currently, she holds the position of EVP at Executive Vice President at Client Strategy at TicketSocket, and is the Vice President and Co-Founder of Ice Cream Social, a cutting-edge tool that revolutionizes the word-of-mouth marketing in our digital era. Her expertise in customer acquisition and retention across various channels like email, search, and content marketing has set her apart in the field that she works in. If you are enjoying this content, please do consider subscribing and you won't miss an episode. And you can go to businessgrowthtalks.com for more information. Hello, Ashley. How are you today?
Hey, Mark. I'm great. What a nice bio you put together.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's all accurate, I hope. All of it is accurate. And I'm sure we'll have a lovely conversation here. I'm really looking forward to this deep diving into digital marketing and some of your unique and innovative approaches to digital marketing. So, Ashley, the first question I ask all of my guests is, what does a business mindset mean to you?
Great question. And this was actually a hard lesson that I had to learn early on in my career. As I first started my career, I was mostly freelancing, consulting full-time. And I had this attitude of, I love marketing. I just want to do marketing. I'm a marketing person. And so I had that mindset for so long. And I used that crutch to kind of ignore important aspects of being a consultant or a freelancer and what that looks like. To me, I identified as a freelancer consultant because it meant I just got to focus on marketing. But I learned that you actually need to think of yourself as a business and have that business mindset in order to succeed. And some of those, you know, tough lessons involve things like finances, taxes, sales, interpersonal skills, you know, talking to people. And so, you know, after a few years of thinking, I'm just a marketing person and that's what I like to do, I learned, okay, I need to approach this completely differently if I want to have a successful long career.
And do you think you... So it sounds like you weren't entrepreneurial by nature. You very much enjoyed the domain, the digital marketing domain that you were in. Jumping forward, we will jump back, but jumping forward, do you think setting up Ice Cream Social was something that was a burning ambition for you to start your own business, or was it something that evolved through your career?
It's definitely something that evolved and came a little bit later in my career. I really, before I, you know, started something like Ice Cream Social, I wouldn't say mastery because, you know, ever evolving, but learned how to actually treat myself as a business and my consulting freelancing career as a business and have a business mindset before I went on to do, you know, bigger things.
Yeah. A mentor that I had for a long time when I was in corporate, I've told this story many times, but he said to me, even in corporate world, everything is sales. So you're selling a product, you're selling a service, you're selling yourself, you're selling yourself to gain more business, you're selling yourself for a promotion. It's just everything is sales. And it was quite a game changer for me in that mindset to actually think, okay, so I'm selling every day, I'm going in and I'm looking to sell myself for promotion every time. Was there a mentor that you worked with, or like, how did you then move to the entrepreneurial world? Was it, like you said, it evolved, but was there input from friends, family, mentor, coach?
Yes. I mean, I've always had great mentors that I've worked with, and I still work with them to this day. One of them is a co-founder of Ice Cream Social with me. One of them's the CEO of Ticket Socket, and then another one with another agency I consult with. And then it looks like we're both, for those of you listening on the podcast audio, but on video, it looks like we're both avid book readers. Yes. So, you know, there's all my mentors behind me as well. Mentorship has definitely been an important aspect of growing. And along the lines of what you're saying about no matter what, you're always kind of in sales, I've always had this thought of, no matter what role I'm in, I'm still a preneur. You know, in some cases, I am an entrepreneur and I have my own consulting. In some cases, I'm an intrapreneur where I'm working within a company, but still have that preneur mindset and growing and developing new things. And then in some cases, I'm a solopreneur where I just have my projects that I like to work on by myself.
Yeah.
And you can have all of that at the same time.
Yes, you absolutely can. Moving on, tell me one thing about your upbringing which reflects on who you are today.
So, let's see. As a kid, I loved to play video games. And growing up, I played them with my brother. Growing up, we really only had one or two games.
Okay.
Two games, really. And once you beat a game, you beat a game. And I feel like kids these days, once you beat a game, you get a new game and you move on and you keep getting new games. Or, you know, you've got games that are ever evolving, like Fortnite and, you know, things like that. But many years ago, my brother and I would replay the same games over and over again. And to keep it interesting, what we would do is create new challenges to really optimize our results. So, big Mario fan. So we'd play a lot of Super Mario Brothers and we'd say, okay, this round, let's see how many coins that we can get.
Right.
Like, don't miss a coin. Let's complete the whole game, get as many coins as possible.
Right.
And then another time we'd say, okay, let's see how fast we can beat each level. And then you can kind of layer them. And as I got older and I started playing around with marketing, I first started in search engine optimization, which 15 years ago, 17, however many years it's been now, way different game than today, way easier. But to me, that was my new video game. And I realized digital marketing was where I want to be, because no matter what campaign you have running and the different marketing channels, emails, Facebook ads, SEO, there's always this component of tweaking and doing things better. And I love that. I love the tinkering and I love that marketing feels like playing Mario Brothers.
Oh, amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
So what drew you into marketing? You said it was about the relationship with your past and in your history of playing games, but What started you on that path to have marketing part of your life?
Sure. So in high school, which I, reflecting back, I find so interesting because I grew up in a very small town, an hour from any kind of city, small farm town. So very small school. You kind of know everybody in your city type town. And we had a club called DECA, which some of you listening were probably in DECA or have heard of DECA, but essentially it's kind of like a business and marketing club.
Okay.
And I was not the best student. I just didn't do good in school. And the classes that I took that were part of DECA were honestly some of the only classes that I got decent grades in. And we had really cool opportunities to compete doing things like sales and marketing competitions in high school. So I was exposed to that early on, and as I graduated high school, that just seemed like a natural fit because it was really the only thing that I...
Tell me about the...
Being honest.
No, I appreciate the honesty, and I'm sure you probably weren't as bad as what you're painting the picture of, but I'm glad you found marketing as a domain to sort of deep dive into. So tell me about the concept of Ice Cream Social and what specific market it addresses.
Sure. So the idea behind Ice Cream Social is to turn every single customer into an influencer for your brand or your business or your event. And the thinking behind that, I've done a lot in influencer marketing. Everything from giving someone free product in exchange for posting a picture, all the way to, you know, paying a 15-year-old girl $100,000 for one YouTube video. So I've kind of touched everything across the gamut there for influencer marketing on different levels. And what I have found is, even if you do not have social media, you can still be an influencer. Even if you don't have social media, which I know sounds weird, who doesn't have social media? But everyone has friends and family who are just not active on social media. And what Ice Cream Social does is help facilitate that word of mouth marketing in the digital world. Just giving them the tool to facilitate that. If they want to send a text, of course, you can post online. And it was really developed from a need. I had clients that were struggling and said, hey, I need to sell more tickets to my events because I focus in on event marketing. And I don't want to increase my budget. I can't spend more money on Facebook ads. And so that's kind of where, that is where Ice Cream Social, the idea for it was developed, was out of a need, clients needing to sell more tickets, but didn't want to pay for more marketing.
Okay.
And so we created this widget to facilitate that.
Okay, let's talk about selling tickets in a minute. I'm just interested about the influencer market. So while you were saying that, I was like, so influencer marketing, like you've got like, I don't know, Cristiano Ronaldo who gets like $1 million or someone to post something on Instagram. And I was thinking that this is a unique, special case when it comes to social media. But actually, influencer marketing used to be advertising. People would people advertise a perfume or an aftershave or a t-shirt or whatever it is. So what's your thoughts on sort of the evolution of influencer marketing? And do you think it's more profitable for the content creators or as well as the brands now with social media?
I do. I think it's great on both ends. You have to know how to track it to make sure you're measuring the ROI on that. I would say I've also worked on things. I've worked with celebrities in the sense of like using them as influencers or celebrity endorsements. And honestly, in some cases, our standard influencer who's not celebrity level, their content has a lot of times outperformed what a celebrity has done. I'm also not talking about your super big A-list celebrities like Ronaldo, but celebrities of well-known names.
Yeah.
And as long as you know how to measure it, you know what the end goal is, they have the audience that you're trying to reach and they have an authentic relationship with them and they're engaged, you can see great results.
Do you think ads, when you see like, so if you're on TikTok and you see an ad symbol come up at the bottom of TikTok, I instantly think I'm kind of turned off by that. I'm like, I much prefer you producing content that's authentic to what you really love or whatever the passion is or whatever you're sharing on TikTok. Is that just me, or is that generally across the board that when you see that ad symbol on TikTok or on Instagram, does that, how does that translate? Because you said it's all about ROI that you can achieve on the platform.
Yeah.
Is that just me that's being unique about the way I get turned off by an ad, or is that something that other people experience?
I think it's 50-50. And the reason I say that is, it depends on what kind of relationship you have with the person in that ad? Is that an influencer that you follow and engage with all their content and love everything they're selling or talking about? You're not going to be turned off by seeing ad on it. You're going to want to support them. If it's just, you know, you kind of know who they are and you're getting the ad, or you don't even know who they are and you're getting the ad, then yeah, that can be a turnoff. So that is, you know, something to consider again, is just, you know, what is their relationship with their audience? Yeah.
Okay, let's go deep dive into Ice Cream Social. So it's about selling tickets. I could actually do with your help at the moment. I'm doing my 500th episode is coming up of my show. And I'm doing a live ticketed event in London on the 17th of May. And I'm out there selling tickets, friends, family, network, building the audience, reaching out to people. From that ticketing aspect, so would that be, how does it work with Ice Cream Social? How do you help people sell tickets in that method?
So Ice Cream Social, essentially what we do is we can bolt it on to any website or checkout flow. So we have, you know, different partnerships with different ticketing companies or, you know, booking companies. And essentially what happens is somebody goes through the checkout process, and on the confirmation page, they get an offer. Something along the lines of, hey, this event would be way more fun if your friends go with you. So why don't you invite them? Send them this promo code. And if you get 3 friends to buy a ticket, we'll give you a ticket refund or a gift card or something, whatever prize that we deem is worthy.
Yeah. And
it doesn't have to be 3 people. It could be 5. Yeah. It could be 10. Yeah. There's some factors that kind of we decide.
What have been the challenges that you've faced developing Ice Cream Social?
I would say, you know, technology moves fast. And so we're always ever evolving our product to keep up with that. I honestly, sometimes the trickiest part can be integrating to other platforms. We've had some great conversations with some huge well-known companies to integrate our tool, but then we find out it could take us 2 years to finish the integration because the other company's tech stack is so ancient because they've had it for so long and just keep building on top of it. So it's kind of like mixing different technologies. So I would say that, you know, honestly can be some of our bigger challenges is just navigating integration.
Yeah. And how do you measure, I was just going to say, how do you measure success for Ice Cream Social? What are the metrics that you use to measure that?
Great question. So some of the basic measurements is, of course, how much traffic we bring to your site, because we consider every customer an influencer. So all the influencers are sending out their links and bringing traffic back to your website, and very highly targeted traffic to your website, because they're inviting their best friends who they know want to go with them, or their parents or their brother, sister, that sort of thing. So traffic, we do measure that. We measure conversions, how many sales Ice Cream Social brought in for you directly, and revenue. How much additional revenue Ice Cream Social added to your bottom line.
And what's the sort of pricing model that you use for this business?
Sure. So for most of our clients, we offer Ice Cream Social at no monthly cost. So they get to use the tool, and if it works, they pay us out almost as like an affiliate or promoter of their event. So we'll charge a small percentage of the revenue we generated for them. Right. Not their total revenue, only the revenue of sales that we generated for them.
That seems perfectly fair. And yeah. And your team, what's the makeup of your team that helps you there?
So our team is mostly dev, so we can keep our product, you know, stable, advancing, and we probably have a smaller sales team than most people would think. We really focus in, rather than going out there and pitching and trying to do sales for, you know, different individual clients, we focus on our partnerships and our, like, our channel partners and allow them to bring us the clients. So we focus on nurturing those relationships to kind of feed our sales funnel.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Can you explain how Ticket Socket, your other role, empowers event directors and how it's a game changer in the event management system?
Yes. So at Ticket Socket, well, Ticket Socket is a white labeled ticketing platform and registration solution. We power a lot of big brands, Spartan, Ironman, Your Color Runs, a lot of circuses, lantern festivals, you name it. We ticket all kinds of events. And the thing is, you've probably never heard of Ticket Socket because we're white label. So that's why clients like to come to us, because branding is very important for them. They want a streamlined process for their end user so that their end user's never leaving their site and branding experience. The other one is data. You own all of your data. The data is yours. Your customer data is your greatest asset. A lot of ticketing companies these days, you either share the data or they also have ownership in the data and they're remarketing to your customers other events, other competing events, and money. So a lot of other ticketing companies, they process the transaction on their behalf and they keep the money and pay you out when they're ready. Sometimes that's after your event ends or every 2 weeks or whatever kind of deal you got going. And especially during COVID, this became a huge, huge issue because when events were canceled, a lot of companies did not have access to their money because the ticketing provider held on to the funds and would not release funds until the event happens. And because of that, a lot of events weren't able to really pivot and adjust and get through that COVID period because they didn't have any funds. So at Ticket Socket, you actually have your own merchant of record. So if somebody buys a ticket, the money goes directly into your bank account. So brand money data, those are kind of the biggest reasons.
So you do the support software, you do the support network behind if one of these larger events, they then... So what I'm saying is you have like a Ticketmaster that is like a portal that you go onto and you look at your music or your gigs or your sporting events and you go as a as an action, you're going there because there's an element of trust that these sites are big companies with lots of events that you might be interested in. But you're saying you white label it. So all of the back end, all the infrastructure that you've got at Ticket Socket basically goes onto their own website where they're selling tickets. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
That's very straightforward. I love that. I think that's a really smart way of doing it.
If you're familiar with like WordPress or Squarespace, like that's an infrastructure you're using to build your website on. And so it's, you don't know, unless you're like super savvy, you don't go to a website and be like, oh, this is a WordPress website.
Yes.
So it's kind of like tickets. You go to buy your tickets and it looks like you're on that event's website and they have their own checkout flow. But really it's our software kind of powering it in the back end for them.
And I think it's interesting you say that you don't hold the data for any marketing purposes yourself. The whole data is owned by the owner. Why was there because obviously data is master of the universe at the moment. It's the key metric. It's the key thing that most people want to be able to do for other marketing purposes. Why did you make that decision at Ticket Socket? Because that could have added valuable data for you to be able to use for other clients or other strategies.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, those are conversations that have come up a lot of, oh man, if we had everyone's data, we could do this, this, and this. But, you know, at the end of the day, that was some of the biggest gripes of people that were coming to us use our software, because let's say you think of a lot of these fun runs or, you know, local events, local concerts, and they're using some of the bigger name platforms out there and they're emailing and, you know, retargeting ads, SMS to your customer list for competing events. It may not be competing on the same exact day and time, but it's competing for money. You know, we only have so much disposable income that we can spend on going to fun events. So if somebody does something, you know, the early June, maybe they aren't going to do your event end of June. So you're competing in many other ways that you don't realize it.
And so from my experience, I won't name the company. They've been absolutely fine, but I won't name the company just for other reasons. The company that I'm using for my ticketing for my event actually have said to me, you pay a fee for upfront for the number of tickets, maximum tickets that you can sell on this platform. So I've paid that upfront, and then all of the ticket, I say profits, all the money that comes through of buying tickets then goes into an account, which I can then export to my own account.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think, what's your view on that structure? Does that sound a sound structure? It's obviously different to how you've done it at TicketSocket, but like, what's your thoughts? I'm just really prime because I'm interested like whether I've made a good choice in using this platform rather than using a different one.
Yeah, I mean, it honestly depends on what your goals are as an event manager. If that fits your needs and your budget, that's great. I'm not an event manager or owner, but I work very closely with a lot of events. Sure. I don't think the idea of having your money sit in another account and have to transfer it out is ever good.
Okay.
Just because of, like I mentioned, happened during COVID. Mm. Imagine you went 2 days without transferring any funds or something, and all of a sudden you can't access that money anymore.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it really does depend on what works for you as the event manager.
And
knowing where we're going with data, wouldn't you want to own your data? Because if something ever happened, at least you have all your customer data.
Yes.
And you can reach out to them.
I'm not sure I can download their names from this platform. I've not actually thought about it. So a lot of the people are people that have been in my network. I know who they are. So I have had some random people that I don't know that have bought tickets. It's an interesting point. I'm going to have a look and see if I can download that information, because I think it would be interesting to see whether I can then store that information and then do something with it as a follow up, a thank you after the event. So your marketing, because the other thing about this, I'm asking all questions about my event, but interestingly, the platform that I chose didn't, like their upfront fee wasn't very expensive, but they provided no marketing at all. Now, I know you've got like your Eventbrites and those types of companies that there is an element of searchability by using those platforms. How do you, so you're using their website to connect with. What's like, so is all of their marketing to their people, is it all based on them and their website, or do you add additional services to help them with their marketing for their event?
Sure. So a lot of our clients coming to us, they've probably vetted Eventbrite. Maybe they've worked with Eventbrite in the future. And yeah, that has its benefits, some of the searchability and discoverability. And if you're a new, smaller event, that might be a place for you to start for sure. For us, some of the kind of marketing services we offer are integrated within the platform. So there's, you know, obvious things where you've got the SEO structure of your events for searchability within Google. And then same, we can auto publish your events to Google Events. So, you know, that information can easily be found if people are Googling. We have integrations like Ice Cream Social, which was born within TicketSocket platform, okay, later peeled off to become its own company. And then we have MyRoll, which essentially what my role is at the company is I help our clients sell as many tickets as possible. So that could be as simple as a basic marketing onboarding with our clients, making sure all their pixels analytics are integrated, kind of showing them some of our third-party integrations with email, SMS, whatever the case may be, a lot of times our clients probably have their own marketing team, so they probably don't need me, but they want to know how to use the system to its fullest from a marketing capability. So I'll run them through that. And then in some instances, we have clients that I actually work as part of their marketing team, either providing them with strategy or ongoing optimizations, analyzing what they're doing, or even executing a lot of Facebook ads, email campaigns.
And what's a successful strategy? Just think back to a couple of your sort of case studies that you've done previously. What's been the components of those strategies that you've implemented to give great digital marketing support?
Sure. So I'd say number one is having a strategy. A lot of events don't, and they just publish it and think they could throw up maybe a Facebook post or even an ad and tickets will sell. It's not the case. It's not that easy most of the time. So having a strategy in place is really important. Two, part of that strategy is a phase where you are really building up your event, really getting people excited about it, generating leads for the event, where you're getting people's email address, phone number, because the cost for you to acquire an email address or a phone number is usually pretty nominal, maybe a dollar or less, compared to acquiring a customer. You're going to pay a lot more money in a Facebook ad, for example, to acquire a customer than you are to get their name and email address. If you have their name and email address, you can email them and text them as much as you want for a lower cost than continuously running ads to them. So the biggest piece, if you don't have this, I've seen a lot of failure, is having a primed list that are excited about your event before you ever go on sale. So that's one big component of it. The second one, I would say, or third, you don't want all your eggs in one basket. So I mentioned a lot about running certain ads on a particular platform. You don't want that to be your only go-to, because I've seen some pretty terrible things happen where accounts get hacked or all kinds of things. And then you don't know how to pivot. You don't have a list. There's nothing you can do. And you're kind of at the mercy of this platform. So making sure you have a very well-distributed marketing plan with different marketing channels. Mm.
We'll be back after a quick break.
If you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
How do you keep your best talent, your people at your companies? How do you keep the best people to be able to provide the best service for your clients?
Sure. So within our companies, some of the things that I think work really well is one, just that human connection. We all genuinely care about each other, know each other. If somebody, you know, has a sick cat or a doctor's appointment, like, it's okay, go do your thing. Secondly, within that is that freedom. We all work virtually, and, you know, for the most part, everyone can make their own hours. Yes, we need to be accessible to clients during certain periods and whatnot, and that's fine. But as I mentioned, if you have to run out for something, like, there's no being chained to your desk. So giving people that freedom, letting them take vacations whenever they want, you know, things like that is very important. And thirdly is empowering everyone to be their own leader. We are not a company where people are micromanaged at all. Everyone is very self-starting, self-initiative, or have what I mentioned to you before, that intrapreneur kind of style where they have an idea and, you know, they can run with it and they can lead.
And what's your approach to market expansion, getting new clients? How do you at Ice Cream Social and Ticket Socket think about expanding to new markets and new industries?
Sure. So a lot of that is focusing in on those marketing channels, those partners, because they're going to be our greatest source of referral business. And we know they're going to bring us quality clients. So some of those could be a lot of the merchant processors that we work with, like Square, Stripe. We have great partnerships, relationships with them. Some of our marketing tools, like ActiveCampaign or Attentive, we treat all of them as essentially sales channel partners for us. And we find that a lot more effective than necessarily going after every little potential client.
And how has the market changed since COVID? So obviously hospitality was made, it's an obvious point, it was majorly damaged and hurt. Has there been a bounce back? Are people less interested in going to as many events pre-COVID versus post-COVID?
I would say, you know, personally, from what I'm observing, people are still very interested in going to events. The type of events have evolved because our attention spans are maybe harder to keep.
Yeah.
So your event can no longer just be the same event you've always put on before COVID. It needs to be immersive. It needs to be an experience. Mm. And you need to think of every element of your customer's, you know, senses, you know, the smell, taste, touch, all of that. Like, what kind of experience are you going to immerse them in that's going to keep them coming back, keep them posting about their experience? So I would say that's kind of the biggest shift, is if you're not evolving and having that mindset, it is much more difficult to sell tickets. Mm.
And what have you experienced with the advent of AI in the events management? Has it improved things? Or I was talking to someone today and he was saying, however valuable AI can be for creating posts or email marketing, still that personal touch, that human element, is so pivotal. So what's been your experience of AI in the market?
I would agree with what he's saying. Another element I would just want to throw out there is we've all been using AI for a lot longer than we've realized. Before everyone just started saying AI, it was always a part of our strategies. You think about things like running ads on Meta and how those optimize.
Yeah.
That's always been there.
Yeah.
So a lot of those elements have always kind of been in play. I do agree with that content and wanting it to be authentic in order for it to convert. AI can write a lot of really great things, but you still do kind of need that human element to get it to convert, to push people over the edge. And one thing I like to do when I am using AI for writing support is I don't necessarily put in a prompt and say, hey, I need an email that promotes this event and gets people really excited and gets them to click the buy button. What I do is I actually write my email first, then I'll put it into AI and ask it to optimize it. And then after that, I'll still kind of read it and give it that human touch if it's missing that.
Yeah.
Granted, as you get more advanced with your prompts and everything, but yeah, I do agree that that human element is still important.
Yeah. Look, we're coming towards the end of the interview. It's the same six questions to all my guests. They're quickfire questions. They don't need a quickfire answer. What's the best decision that you've made?
I would say freedom. In my career, I've always kept an element of working from home, always deciding on what opportunities I take on based on, you know, where I'm at in my life, and keeping that element of freedom, no matter how scary it can be sometimes.
So why did you start as a freelancer, first of all? Was it the freedom? Was it the working from home all those years ago?
When I first started, it was the idea of having no ceiling on how much money I could make. No ceiling on my income,
right,
and having full opportunity. And then I had children. So it was flexibility and then time and then, you know, financial and then opportunity. Just kind of always wanted to keep that freedom, no matter how I defined freedom at that time.
Amazing. What's the best piece of advice you've been given?
I'd say, you know, bet on yourself and just go for it and just ask. I think very early on in my career, when I first started, I was charging such a low rate because I was so nervous and feel like I had enough clients and I was young. And someone was like, no, you need to 5X what you're charging. And so I was scared to death because I was like 20 years old. But with my next client, I was like, this is how much it costs. And they said yes. And that changed everything.
That's amazing. That sort of. And who gave you that advice?
Wow. Her name's Terry Sawyer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amazing. And this might be the same answer, but who's the person that's helped you most in your career?
We'll be back after a quick break.
The Coaching Conversation 2024. This podcast is 100% dedicated to leadership and leadership within the workplace coaching area. We work with companies throughout the world teaching leaders how to coach their employees. This podcast is dedicated to teaching specific strategies, frameworks, coaching models, and now artificial intelligence strategies to help leaders drive greater teamwork, collaboration, cooperation, greater attitudes, better motivation, coaching career development, just to name a few. I hope you'll check out our podcast.
I would say in my career, there's three people in particular that I really appreciate everything they've done for me. Mark Miller, who's actually the CEO of Ticketsocket. Jamie Eidsvold, she is the CEO of another agency I've worked with a lot called Smarty Social Media. And then a business coach that I've worked with a lot, his name is Jim Haley. They've all been foundational people in my career since I got started.
Amazing. Tell me about a regret that you have.
I'd say maybe not always taking chances on some personal projects or putting some personal projects off to the side and always, you know, focusing on where the money was at. Once I've, you know, kind of made that shift and focused on some of those personal projects, the money follows and you're much more happy.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. And what are you most proud of?
In terms of my career, what I'm most proud of is just my day to day, the freedom that I have and control I have over my day. You know, working from home, being able to take my kids to school, pick them up if they're sick, you know, whatever, just having that flexibility. I've, you know, worked hard early in my career to create that, being able to go for a hike in the morning if I want, or go to a yoga class or whatever the case may be. Sounds silly,
no, it doesn't.
But it is a really great freedom. And everybody, the people that I work with are my best friends, my family. In my life, and being able to maintain that throughout my career, you know, it makes that lifestyle really rich, that the people I'm working with are also people that I truly adore.
Just on the element of freedom, why, because you've mentioned this now 3 or 4 times in our conversation so far, why is the essence of freedom, do you think, so important for you?
Gosh, I'm so glad you asked that. So let me see if I have the book here. Yes. So there's this book I read called The Desire Map.
Okay.
By a lady named Danielle Laporte. I think I'm pronouncing it correctly. Okay. And it's really more of a workbook. You can see I've got lots of highlights and sticky notes.
Yeah.
And I read this book early on in my career, and I actually revisit it every few years. And takes you through a series of exercises and it'll take you a few days to do it. It's pretty long and intensive, but when you get to the end, you're left with these 3 to 5 core desired feelings of how you want to feel in your life every day. And one of those words that comes up every time I redo the book, a lot of the words change because I'm evolving as a person. Yeah. My life looks totally different every few years. Yeah. But the one word that's always been there is freedom. And obviously I know here in America, we have a very different term for freedom and it's very beautiful and we're very blessed. So for me, that term has always evolved. Before it was like financial freedom, time freedom, opportunity freedom. It's kind of the filter that I use when making decisions. Is this going to, if I say yes to this project, will I still be allowed to do this in everyday life?
But why do you think freedom is that point for you? Because as you say, like, it could be financial freedom, it could be opportunity of freedom. But I'm just really intrigued by the evolution of freedom throughout your life. And look, I live in the UK, you live in America. We do have freedom as a right that we all are allowed to an extent do what we like to do. And in other parts of the world, unfortunately, whether it's your sexuality or your gender or your lifestyle, you don't have those freedoms. I'm just really just want to press you on why you think that is so pivotal, and it has evolved, but why it's so pivotal for you.
Yeah, that's a great question that I haven't put a lot of thought into. I mean, there's a few things that come to mind. I mean, one, growing up, I grew up pretty poor. Not that I went like completely without, my parents still took good care of me, but always having that hunger of wanting more for my life. I'm someone where I need everything in my life to feel in sync or I'm not happy. There's no way I could go to a 9-to-5 that I didn't absolutely love and come home and be able to be the person that I need to be for my kids, for my family, my husband, my friends. You know, honestly, Mark, it was probably something from a past life that just hasn't come to the surface for me.
And the other point you made about what you're most proud of is having friends that are your colleagues and friends who are your mentors. I think you're very, very blessed to have that. I think if you go into more the employee role, people just don't have that. People just people come and go. Like I know in my corporate job, I did corporate for 14 years, and I know you can have quite deep and quite intense relationships with people in those in those companies, and they move or you move, and they just drift. They just absolutely drop off the radar. Is this something like, it sounds like you're very proud of that and you're very like grateful of the fact that you've got colleagues and peers who are your friends as well?
I am. I'm very proud of that and very, very grateful. And yeah, as I mentioned, the mentors that I named, I've been working with since the beginning of my career, and I consider them family. And amazing. Yeah, that's very important to me. Amazing. So it's, I'm going to follow that. That's important to me. Yeah. And filtering opportunity. Is this someone that I want to go out and get a beer with or have over for family dinners?
Yeah. Why do you do what you do?
Oh, man, I think we already answered that. I mean, the freedom.
It's the freedom again. Yeah?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I love the marketing. I love the video game aspect of it. I love the freedom. I love working in events, bringing people together to have a fun experience. I just enjoy it all.
Amazing. And lastly, what does legacy mean to you?
Great question, which I've been pondering a lot about and don't have an answer yet, but it is something I've been thinking a lot about because sometimes in marketing, it can feel superficial of, it's just Facebook. It's just an email. Like, what am I doing to impact the world? And I don't know what my legacy will be yet, but I do know that I want to leave something behind in this world that's healing and loving.
Sounds like there might be another project or business out there doing something different, maybe.
Not at liberty to speak about it yet. Let's do a follow-up episode in 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And lastly, if people want to reach out to you or find out more about you and your business, where can they go?
Sure. You can go to ashley-stanford.com.
Fantastic. Look, thank you so much for your time, Ashley. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for being a guest on my show.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to Business Growth Talks. This podcast is released every Monday, so don't miss an episode by subscribing to all podcast platforms, including Apple and Spotify. Have a great day.